Hello, and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. This week, two acclaimed children's book authors discuss the state of children's literature today. This program originally took place May 19th, 2025, and was recorded live at the American Writers Festival. We hope you enjoy entering the mind of a writer.
All right. Hi, everybody. Welcome. Thanks for coming to the American Writers Festival. Our next program features authors Malcolm Newsome and Clotilda Ewing, and they're going to discuss their visions and aspirations for children's literature, in particular, the ways that they have and will continue to both write and advocate for stories that feature BIPOC characters in settings and narratives that move beyond purely historical and overtly cultural experiences. Malcolm is the author of Dear Star Baby and Sydney's Big Speech, and several forthcoming titles. Clotilda is the author of Stella Keeps the Sun Up, Stella and the Mystery of the Missing Tooth, and the forthcoming Stella and Roger Can't Wait to Grow Up. Welcome, Malcolm and Clotilda.
How's everyone today? All right. Thanks for hanging out with us this afternoon for our panel as we talk about our vision for representation and how we would love to see the industry continue to move forward in this regard. I figured we'd probably start with a few brief introductions and then kind of dive into some questions. So we have some questions prepared that we were prepared to discuss, but I think we'd also like to leave time for you all to ask questions as well. So, Linda, thank you for the wonderful introduction. As she said, my name is Malcolm Newsome, and traditionally published children's author from the Chicagoland area. I was born and raised in Waukegan, and have been in and around the Chicagoland area throughout my life. Dear Star Baby is my debut picture book, released last year, and Sydney's Big Speech was just released in February. Beyond that, I work in cybersecurity. I have five kids, ranging from 20 to 4, and they are a constant inspiration for me as we're on this journey.
Hi, everybody. My name is Clotilde Ewing, and I live here in Chicago. I have two children as well, Stella and Jackson. My oldest, Stella, will be 10 years old in July, and she reminds me often that I've had a lot of jobs in my life. We'll drive by. She said, "You work there, you work there, you work there." And I say that because I started on the writing journey probably about 5 years ago or so. And if I think back over the course of my life, I never thought I would write books. I always loved reading. I love recommending books, but I never thought I would actually write a book. And then I had kids. And when I had my two children, I was really excited for getting all the things that people get when they have kids, the stroller, the cribs. But for me, it was also the books. It was the books. I couldn't wait to build their libraries. And I was surprised at how hard it was. I was able to do it, but I was surprised at how hard it was to build a library that reflected the community that they lived in, that reflected our family, and that reflected the world. I tapped into friends, I tapped into great booksellers, but it shouldn't have been so hard. But then fast forward, you have these kids and you don't sleep, you don't have time to do much. And I came across a New York Times article that was written back in 2018 by my now publisher, Janine Milner. And it was titled, "She Wants More Than MLK at Bedtime." And that article really struck a chord with me because it talked about the lack of diversity in children's books. And we've heard a lot about that. It's grown, but it still isn't where it should be. But what it talked about for me that struck a chord was the fact that the diversity that often exists is one or two notes. Now, it is important to have books that reflect our history. We have a lot of those in our house. It's important to have books that highlight Black excellence. We have those in our house. But it's also important for my kids to see kids who are just out enjoying life, enjoying a popsicle, wanting to stay up at night. And so I cut that article out. I put it on my vision board. I used to work for Oprah. That's another one of the jobs I have that my daughter laughs about. But I put it on my vision board, and I wasn't quite sure why. But I kept walking by it and then decided that I wanted to try and start writing, and I wanted to try and bring that joy that I saw in my own kids and that fight for bedtime that I saw in my own kids into the world. And so that is, I hesitate at calling it a job because it is so personal to me, but it's one of the jobs that I have now that I feel really strongly about, and I'm happy to be here and talk to you guys about that.
Yeah. And so kind of a springboard off of that, you know, I know one of the things that we wanted to talk about was that early motivation for beginning writing. And I think if I can have you take it a little bit further, what was it like for you in that like very early stage as you were just starting to write?
It was
It was
terrifying in many ways. I'm really glad in retrospect that when I had this initial idea, I sent a note out to my family and my friends, and I said, this is what I'm going to try and do. And I sent them the article kind of explaining why, and I did that because I wanted them to hold me accountable, because I also think I knew deep down that if I didn't do that, I probably would have moved on and tried to give up. But there was a lot I didn't know. There's still so much I didn't know. I didn't know how hard it would be to write and stay focused and to move on from ideas that weren't going to work. I didn't know how hard it was going to be to get an agent. I didn't, you know, like the list goes on. But it's been a journey that was worth it. What about you?
Yeah. I remember, so this was before I started writing, and which in earnest for me started in about 2019, where I really decided to pursue, you know, getting published. But if I go back early, maybe, you know, 10 years prior to that, there was a moment in which, so I was in a new house, and the house that I live in has a pretty big yard. And so I was like chopping wood for the first time in my life, you know, and like, because my house has a fireplace, so you know, we're all excited about it. And at one point, I like posted a picture on Facebook, and I said, you know, I might not look like a lumberjack, but you know, I'm having a lot of fun chopping wood or whatever. And it was cool that my dad was the one that chimed in, and it was basically like, you do look like a lumberjack. And so it was that moment where something clicked in my mind, where I always felt like I was fairly progressive in the way that I thought about myself and creating opportunities for myself. But here I was in this moment, not realizing that I had an image of myself, or a limited image of myself, in a way, because I had not seen a lumberjack that looked like me throughout my whole life, right? So it was a moment where I realized that even in the common images that we see from day to day, and what they do is create like a sense of what's normal for us. And so as I then fast forward and started thinking about story, especially story for children, I wanted to have images of the normal, the lumberjack, the whatever, so that they grow up with a sense of like, oh, well, that's just normal. Like, that's just how lumberjacks look. That's just how, you know, on down the line, like that's just how it looks, right?
And who's the they that you refer to?
So they is my children, and so when I started writing, I had my three younger ones now. They're now 10, 6, and 4, but, you know, subtract like 5 years off of that. And so I'm like, if I can have books out in the world that I can now share with them, that I'm super excited to share with them, that was my early motivation, and well, they still remain my motivation now. But so, yes, that's the they. And then my older ones, you know, I had already gone through the process of like initially being, you know, super excited to buy books for them and things like that. But then like that excitement waning, because I'm like, I'm just not finding what I really want to have, you know, what I really want to share with them.
Yeah. I mean, the they for me was the motivation is my children, and I wanted to bring more joy into the world that reflected my kids. At the same time, I also think it's really important for kids that look nothing like mine to see themselves in Estella and to see their joy in Estella. When my second book came out, it's a story about Stella and Roger, and they go on a search of a friend's missing tooth. And I did a number of readings in Atlanta, and the demographics of the school were very different. And one of the schools that I did a reading at, it was a majority white school. And so I'm reading through, and in the previous readings, it's like, okay, do you guys see the tooth fairy? Do you see the tooth fairy? And I was in my head thinking, okay, I wonder what the reaction's going to be. The tooth fairy is a black tooth fairy. And the kids in the class are like, I see the tooth fairy. I see that. It wasn't, I see the black tooth fairy. It wasn't like, oh, wait, the tooth fairy's not black. It was there's the tooth fairy. And it seems very simple, but it was really important for me, for my kids to see themselves, but for kids that look nothing like them, to see themselves in the stories, to see themselves in the joy as well. So that they is, it's broad.
Yeah, absolutely. It's broad. And, because if we take that a bit further, we all know that our society pushes certain narratives, and they use imagery to do that, right? And so if everyone has images, especially positive images, of folks that they might not even encounter on a day-to-day basis, well, now there's going to at some point need to be some sort of like mental tug of war. Like, okay, you're showing me this on the news, but actually, like, I saw a tooth fairy that looked pretty cool, you know, like she looked. The tooth fairy in that book is super funny or kind or whatever the thing is, right? So it's super powerful. It's very powerful and a very...
So your first two are very different from one another. Was that intentional, or is that just how the publishing world worked for you in terms of like the layout?
Yeah, so the intentionality behind the stories themselves is... the thing that I care about is really, like, at the end of the day, hope and possibilities. Trying to tell stories of hope, trying to tell stories of, like, you know, what's possible. And the timing is, it was just a publishing thing, but the stories themselves come from, you know, this place of just, like, what's deeply embedded in my heart, and what I felt like I could hopefully offer to the world. And so, Dear Star Baby, I'll just say a bit about it. It's a tough topic. It's a topic that really, for decades and even beyond, is considered taboo. It's really a story about pregnancy loss, miscarriage. And it's written from a young boy's perspective, as he's writing a letter to his would-be sibling after finding out that his anticipated sibling won't be joining him, right? And so what was really underneath that was taking a personal experience that I had and then hopefully being able to share and hopefully help conversation around this topic, right? Especially with children. But the entire family or unit or everyone from young to old, right? And so there was no intentionality really around, you know, it's to this point of like not having it be about race or culture or that, but something that I felt like is a shared struggle, like across all sorts of people from everywhere, right? And so when I think of story, there is joy and things like that unite us, but then suffering also can be a point in which we build empathy, and empathy then can be that bridge for us to, you know, come together. How about you, as you think about it, like, because you got your series, but how did you think about how you approach these, and was there a particular?
I will say one of the unanticipated challenges with the series. I mentioned I have two kids, Stella and Jackson. Jackson was impressed with number one. Jackson is not impressed with number three. He's like, what's up with me? And I am trying to sell a Jackson book right now. So that is just my own internal home politics at the moment, which has become kind of difficult. But, you know, I am really proud of being able to write a series. When I first signed a contract, it was for two Stella books, and then thankfully they signed up for two additional books. And so it's great. I mean, my kids grew up reading Fancy Nancy, reading picture books like that. And I remember really vividly my daughter wanting to be Fancy Nancy for Halloween when she was 5 years old. And, you know, I went with it. Okay, you want to be Fancy Nancy? We got the outfit. And we went to a school party celebration. And within 5 minutes, she wanted to take the outfit off. She never told me why. She never said why. I asked. I tried not to pepper. I'm not sure if somebody said something to her, like, you can't be Fancy Nancy. That's the mama bear in me. Thought that might be what happened. And it crushed my soul when I found that out. And she ended up being PJ Masks and was very excited about that later. But it means so much to me when I get pictures from moms whose daughters dress up for Estella for character day at school or Halloween. And most of those pictures are of little beautiful black girls who are dressed up as Stella. I did get one picture from a mom in Australia, though, who had a little white child. She struggled with the Afro puffs, but she tried. She had them in little pigtails and had them, you know, whatever. And I was so glad that she thought she could be Stella, too. You know, regardless of what Stella looks like on the cover, she thought she could be Stella, too. But, you know, it definitely warms my heart when I get the from moms and daughters that look like my own stuff.
Love that. Any unanticipated questions or encounters that you've had on your writing journey?
You know, I've had a couple of people who've asked if the books have been banned anywhere. And so far, no. Stranger things have happened because there are some books, no book should be banned, period. But how certain books and authors end up on that list, I don't agree with. That's probably the only thing for me. What about you?
So, one thing that was unexpected for me, which was very positive, and that is after Dear Star Baby released, shortly after it released, I got an email from somebody that has sought me out for a writing project, and because they felt, you know, what they communicated was, you know, you've done so well, like, handling such a difficult topic,
yeah,
and we have this series that we're putting together, you know, that are also difficult topics, and, you know, would you be interested in taking a look at it? And that was, like, that was such an important moment for me,
yeah,
because it was I've been a part of conversations in the past where folks are saying, like, if you think of me for a panel or for a thing or for whatever it is, like, please don't just think of me for the diversity topics or for the you know, but please think of me for craft-related things,
mm-hmm,
right? And so that was that moment for me,
yeah,
where somebody said, like, okay, I see what you did as a writer,
right,
and I'd love to see what you do with, you know, taking this sort of thing further. I'm pretty sure I'll carry that with me forever on this writing journey.
That's amazing. Congrats.
Yeah.
You're pursuing a project?
Yeah, so that I did do that
okay.
That project, and it was a fairly short thing, but I was able to get it done, and we'll see where things like that go in the future.
Sorry, that was my mom's Sunday phone call. She knows I'm in the panel, so I have to call her back.
does diversity, so when we talk about diversity, what does diversity mean for you, and what do you hope it means for your kids?
I hope that my kids recognize the beauty of difference, the beauty of the community that they live in, that the world that they're growing up in. We're very lucky to live in Chicago, which unfortunately is a segregated city, but we live in a more integrated neighborhood. They go to a school that has a lot of diversity, and I want them to grow up in a world and see a world where they truly are able to pursue the life that they're intended to and aren't limited by gender, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation. It's a celebration of all of who we are. What about you?
Yeah, great. When I think about diversity or even representation, what I'm thinking about is, you know, we've kind of said it already, the sort of the ways that we can create new normals, you know, create a new sense of like what's normal. And to me, that's really sort of the power of diversity. I grew up in a town, Waukegan, which I consider to be very diverse, especially compared to lots of other places that I've been. And I often say that, like, that was the best education for me because it wasn't just racial or ethnic diversity, but it was socioeconomic, it was, you know, family size, it was, you know, like, lots of different axes that we can look at. And so what that did for me was help me to see how I relate to different people, like in ways that go beyond just physical characteristics.
Right.
And so I like at the core of it, I think that the greater diversity that we have, you know, when we look at, when we take physical characteristics into account, I think what we are then able to do is go beyond and start to, you know, really look at what matters, right? Which is like, how do you treat me? Like, who's kind? Who's showing empathy? Who's like all these things?
Mm-hmm.
The things that really, you know, help communities to be better, help schools to be better, help, you know, relationships,
right.
All those things.
Right. You know, I'm thinking about your comment about the lumberjack and the importance of seeing that imagery for a little kid who may want to be a lumberjack, a little black boy who may want to be a lumberjack one day. It may seem so small to see that picture in a book, but that means something to that kid who may see a future that he otherwise wouldn't have thought of because he didn't see that. And that's good for kids and adults alike. I wrote an essay some time ago about this experience that my son and I had at Target. My son, oh, I shouldn't have said the store, but okay, at a big box store. My son at the time was probably 5, and you know, my kids are these kids that if they get money, they're like, oh, I gotta spend it, where are we gonna go? And he's better than my daughter at that, but he had some money, he wanted to spend it, so we go to this store. And he finds this mechanical snake. And so if you're going to spend that, then that's okay, but your responsibility. So he gets the money out of his pocket, he does his math, he wows the lady with his math, and she says, oh my goodness, you're so smart. And then she says, what are you going to do when you grow up? You're going to be a basketball player? You're going to be a baseball? I mean, and this is like in 2021. And she really did mean it as a compliment. She was wowed by his skill. And yet the first thing she jumped to was an image that she sees often on television and thought about an athlete. And could have made a big deal at the time. And so I just said, or a mathematician, or an engineer, or an architect, or a basketball player, if that's what you want to do. But it is so important for people to see images and to see that we can do anything. that we can do anything, whether you're a kid or whether you're an adult alike, to kind of normalize that for people.
Yeah. And that, like, I had this conversation, you know, fairly recently, because as a student growing up through school, I did well in all my subjects, and I like, even growing up, I know I wrote a lot, and I wrote good essays, and I always got good grades on my essays and all the things, right? But there was never a moment where anyone was like, oh, you should pursue writing. Or there was never a moment where anybody, like, in a school system or other places in the community, I didn't have any of those moments where someone told me, like, I could do this, like, super amazing thing, right? Fortunately for me, those messages were coming from my parents.
Yeah.
But then what I think about is, like, well, what about, you know, situations where kids aren't getting those messages at home? So if they're not getting them at home and they're not getting them anywhere else, we've just let a kid down, and I'm not okay with that.
Yeah. Do you guys have any questions in here before, and we can keep going as well, but if you all have questions, then I can.
Can you talk about your new project that you just completed?
Talk about a new project?
Your project, yeah.
Okay. So Sydney's Big Speech?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Sydney's Big Speech just released in February. The idea here is, so the premise for the story, on the first day of first grade, Sydney's asked to introduce herself, like stand up and say her name. She freezes, okay? And she knows what she wants to say, but then the story is about effectively going through the process of being able to get the words out. So that she gets a speech assignment that is, what are you going to be when you grow up? And she ultimately takes inspiration from some popular black female figures that her dad shows her. So we're talking about Kamala Harris, Condoleezza Rice, Carol Moseley Braun, Shirley Chisholm. So as we're talking about, like, diversity and representation, it is effectively a story about the power of representation. But like, that's kind of the subtext for me, because it's also about, you know, what we just talked about, the sort of narratives that when somebody is young, often they might get typecast a certain way because of some characteristics or some, you know, like, either a perceived lack or whatever, what a lack of ability that they might have in a certain way or whatever. So in this particular instance, it's about the fact that she struggles to stand up and say what she wants to say, right? And so what happens often is that, like, well, if, you know, people grow up thinking, like, well, if this person is shy, if this person can't speak in public, then they can't, they might not ever get that, like, oh, you're going to be a great leader someday. You're going to be a great motivational speaker someday. You're going to, right? Because those things require speaking. And so what I wanted to do was cut through that, right? To say, even though things might appear a certain way now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're excluded from something amazingly great, even though it might require that thing, you know, that thing that people can't see from you.
I have a question. What's the book Dear Star Baby about?
Yeah, so Dear Star Baby is about, it features a young boy who's super excited for a baby sibling, whether that be a brother, baby brother or sister. His parents let him know, and they're all super excited, but then he finds out that the baby is not going to make it home from the hospital. And so it then becomes about, like, seeing how he and his family can sort of come together in a moment that's really hard for them, and show each other love and support through a tough time. Thank you. Great question.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you for listening to this episode from the American Writers Museum Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe so you are notified when new episodes are released. Now go, be inspired, and find the mind of a writer in yourself.